This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 31st, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 323 and Happy New Year. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this special edition, the MMA panel looks ahead to the new year. I'm joined by Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan of Simon Fraser University on what to expect in 2024. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome again to the MMA panel on the Breaker.News podcast. I'm Mackin, Bob Mackin. We got Mario, the other M, as in Mario Canseco, the president of Research Co. And we've got Andy Yan, the A, in the MMA panel. Andy Yan is the director of the city program for Simon Fraser University. And we're getting together to look into the crystal ball and telling you what you can expect in the next 12 months as we go around the sun again here in 2024. First, we're going to start at 12th and Cambie, right smack dab in the middle of Vancouver. City Hall got exciting late in 2023 when Mayor Ken Sim marked his first year in office by dusting off a promise he used to have that he actually said he wasn't going to follow through with, but now he is again, to abolish the Parks Board. The ABC City Council voted to forward that to the provincial government. David Eby and the NDP in the next session are going to consider changes to the Vancouver Charter to make that happen. They're waiting for a number of boxes to be ticked. They want to know what's going to happen, of course, with the unionized staff. They want to know what's going to happen with relations with area First Nations, the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh. And of course, it caused a split in the ABC caucus. And we've also seen former Park Board commissioners from opposite ends of the political spectrum. We've seen hell freeze over. We've seen people like Melissa DiGenova and Sarah Blythe agree on something for the first time, maybe ever. But now they can agree that the Park Board should not be abolished. So here we've got a political dynamic happening. Do you think that this is the beginning of the end for ABC? Could ABC flame out before the 2026 election? Mario Canseco.
Well, there's a possibility of that happening. And I think we need to look into the terrible history that we've had in this country amending documents. You look at the Meech Lake Accords, you look at Charlottetown, and what is happening here is similar in my view, because it's not just going to be a rubber stamp that says, okay, now the council takes care of all the things that the Park Board used to take care of. This is going to be a process, and it's going to be just like Charlottetown, where you start with one idea, and then 2 months down the road, you have this laundry list of things that have to be input of in front of somebody to say yes or no to. So I think that is going to be complicated for them, especially when you open it up to First Nations discussing what they want to see. You need to figure out what to do about the unions, as you said. So this isn't going to be as simple as you're saying, we're just going to take off this little piece of the charter and add this one, and it's all going to be fine. So I think there's significant potential for political missteps, and council is surrounded by people who aren't politicians. So it's not going to be that easy. This isn't as simple as, you know, cutting some ribbons and talking about certain things and saying that swagger is back. This is an issue where they're going to need a lot of support and a lot of emphasis on how to get things done properly, because this isn't the kind of thing that can be done. If people like Brian Mulroney tried it twice and failed, I don't know how ABC can seriously consider this and think that it's going to be successful immediately.
Andy Yan, with this move by Ken Sim to get rid of the Park Board, he said it's going to save millions of dollars, but he hasn't shown us the plan. Just like right. In the fall of 2023, they started to cut down 160,000 trees at Stanley Park in order to save it from the ravages of the looper moth infestation and the drought. They haven't shown us the plan there. They haven't shown us the science behind it. Are we starting to see a pattern at 12th and Cambie under the ABC administration where it's decision-based evidence-making instead of evidence-based decision-making?
I think that that's part of the challenge ahead. I mean, when you see, I think one headline, general atmosphere of crazy, is not particularly a headline you want in terms of the description of local governance. And I think going into really how I think one Parks Board advocate took a photo of someone's phone, and it was on this, I think, phone talking about this. I think what some would summarize as a City Hall insider being very happy about how things are going, that I think it elicits an environment of distrust. And I think that what this all comes down to, I think, is a growing environment. I think for some, they never trusted ABC to begin with, but a potential for a growing mistrust at, between what was promised and what is being delivered. And I think that underlying all this, and if you really, really think about it, is actually how much Vancouverites value their parks. And I think the jump, if this does occur, is going to be a serious challenge for ABC, is if people associate the change of the Parks Board as a growing threat to the parks of the city of Vancouver. That it's a city that is very much defined by its parks, and not only its parks, but its community centers. And I think that that is a form of the political identity for many Vancouverites, I think, through which I think for that they kind of set aside in the background as they kind of enjoy their very expensive lives in the city. But yet, I think it provides a respite in towards how we live in the city. And I think right now, I think that this is really where this kind of age of uncertainty, the age of rage, if you will, is really coming into, I think, into view, really towards what this move could do, and what people may think it will do, and what it will actually do, and how those are almost three separate things, and how I think this general environment of mistrust amongst any number of organs could actually, I think, organize, be a form of organizing, I think, for those who oppose the ABC majority. And I think that this is actually going to be, I think, the thing to watch, is that is this part of the organizing of a much stronger opposition to ABC than what we saw in the prior civic election.
We'll shift our focus to Surrey. Now, the interesting part of Surrey is Mike Farnworth, the Solicitor General, used his power to fire the police board late in 2023 because the transition from the RCMP to the Surrey Police mm-hmm. Service isn't going the way the province wants it. Mayor Brenda Locke, of course, promised to voters in 2022 that she would do everything she can to keep the RCMP in Surrey and get rid of Doug McCallum's Surrey Police Service. So you contrast that with what's happening in Vancouver, where Ken Sim will take his next steps in 2024 to get rid of the Vancouver Park Board, to fire the Park Board commissioners, essentially. But in Surrey, they don't have a police board anymore. They've got an administrator, a former police chief from Abbotsford. Meanwhile, Mayor Brenda Locke, she's sending lawyers to BC Supreme Court to contest the whole thing. There's a judicial review, which will be heard sometime sooner than later in 2024. Mario Canseco, will the police transition be settled once and for all in 2024? Will Mayor Brenda Locke win in the court of public opinion, the court of law, both or neither?
I think it has to happen probably in the next 4 months. If the election happens early, and I think there's still a big possibility that that might be the case, you don't want to have a situation where you're knocking on doors in Surrey as an NDP candidate and they tell you, oh, you know, you guys went against what the mayor wanted to do and you guys don't care about safety. I think there'll be a moment in the first 3 months of the year where the two governments come together and talk about a way to make this work. It's necessary for both of them. You know, you can't keep fighting a fight that you're going to be losing when there are other issues in Surrey that are affecting the way people perceive your mandate, particularly on the education front, if you're Brenda Locke. And if you're David Eby, you don't want to be in a place where you can hand Surrey back to BC United or the BC Conservatives because of all of this craziness. So there's going to be a moment when they talk about it. And you need a solution that lets everybody save face. You know, it's not a complete defeat of the other government's position. It's ultimately saying, well, we did talk to each other. We managed to hash out this fair compromise that is going to work for everybody. But if the election isn't made, it needs to happen fairly quickly.
And speaking of the provincial election, you know, it's scheduled for October. David Eby has said that that's what he wants to do is keep it in October. Added to that dynamic is the situation, the splitting on the right. You've got BC United, the former BC Liberals, who lost some of their people on the center right of the political spectrum. The BC Conservatives have seen a resurgence in polls. We haven't seen them have a resurgence yet in fundraising. But could these parties find a truce on the way to the election to unite the right? Or will they lose like in 1996 when the NDP was able to exploit the split between the BC Liberals, what was left of the Socreds, as well as the BC Reform Party? Mario Canseco.
I think they're running out of time. And the reality is the animosity that has been shown by both sides is... leads me to believe that they're nowhere near establishing a truce. I think they've been both very critical towards each other. The way in which some of the ads have been done, particularly the social media ones where the Conservatives target Falcon and some of the criticism that he's received, is not going to make this easy. And ultimately, you need to decide who's going to be the one calling the shots on this. You know, Rostad could very easily say, we're climbing, so we should be me, the leader. Whereas Falcon might say, I'm more experienced, I've been in here, and I think I should be the one who can unite us. So I think it's definitely not something that will be easy to do. And it certainly helps the NDP build its case. You know, we haven't had a terrible government. We changed premiers. Things are working well for the most part. A lot of the criticism that has been happening after the COVID-19 pandemic hasn't really been as strong as what we saw in the latter years of the Christy Clark government. So I think that is also part of it. You have people who are finding specific politicians to be mad about. And in British Columbia, it seems to be federal. Not a lot of concern about municipal politics yet. It's been just a year. People aren't unhappy with David Eby either. So if the election happens in May, which I think it will, and we actually talked about this last year, there might be an opportunity for them to do things quickly. And it also forces the hand for the BC United Party and the BC Conservatives to say, we have to unite, or this could be something that lasts a decade.
Now, on federal politics, we've got a foreign interference public inquiry, which is in its very early stages, even though it's supposed to wrap up by the end of 2024. We have an interesting dynamic in Canada where the headlines in 2023 were mostly about China and the Chinese Communist Party interfering federally and even municipally and even provincially. Then we had the headlines about the Indian government, especially connected to evidence that points towards Indian government agents being involved in one way, shape, or form in the murder of Hardeep Singh Nijjar in Surrey. And the Americans have laid charges against someone involved in a murder for hire scheme against an associate of Nijjar. We have seen, of course, the ongoing situation with the Russia's war on Ukraine and how Canada has done whatever it can to keep spending money to keep the Ukrainians from being decimated by the Russians. This is a really battle between good and evil, as Putin still continues to pommel Ukraine. And of course, we saw what happened to Israel on October 7th, the October 7th massacre, and the worst day for Jews since the Holocaust, and how Israel responded and how various countries have responded in terms of support for Israel. And the Canadian government support has kind of wavered in recent weeks, as we've seen various protests, some of them connecting to groups which are acting in Canada, which have loyalties to or connections to Hamas. So we're in a different era here with Canadian foreign policy. So this foreign interference public inquiry, starting with you, Andy Yan, will it become a circus, or will this become something that will move Canada forward and make Canada a better, stronger place for diaspora groups and for Canadian institutions?
I think what it will be is a spotlight on the changing nature of Canadian society and its relationships to global politics. That what was thought to be politics over there and a separation of what was happening over there as opposed to what was happening in Canada. I think what we're quickly discovering is that wall, that firewall, if you will, is getting pretty thin. And not to mention it's getting pretty thin, that there are certain holes in that wall that need to be mending. That a lot of this, I think, is, one policy response to this is is some kind of foreign registry. And I think what's interesting is that, some folks have called this foreign registry the new Chinese Exclusion Act, which frankly seems farcical and completely exaggerated, really completely exaggerating the issue. But yet, at the same time, I think it's saying that while other countries have actually, because they realize this changing global environment, touching upon local democracy, has begun to pursue policies like a foreign registry, not to, if you will, exclude those diasporic communities from local democracy, but to include and protect those local communities. So for me, I think this is really going to be telling in terms of what Canada is willing to protect its democracies and those who participate in it. And it's really, so I think that that's really, I think what will happen, I think, as we see is really the, I think the challenges that are ahead of us. And I think there are some serious challenges ahead of us when we talk about the role of Canadian democracy and those who participate in it.
Mario Canseco, the Foreign Interference Public Inquiry, will it be a circus or will it be a solution?
I'm hoping it's a solution. One of the reasons for this is Canadians agree that this is something that needs to be dealt with. The level of support for a registry of foreign interferers, if you will, is significantly high. So people want to see that. I think people recognize that there's a need to establish relationships with other countries and to try to figure out how you can make things better for trade or for other issues. But this is not the way to do it. And, I'm still disappointed with the fact that the scope is going to be only for two federal elections. Municipal elections are usually the farm team for people who join provincial politics and federal politics. We're still asking questions about what happened in Vancouver in 2022 as far as the possible interference of the Chinese government helping some campaigns. But we're not going to get a chance to know more about this. So it might be an interesting start, and I hope it all ultimately leads to specific policies that say there's a difference in helping people who are coming in here to learn more about the country and to do something related to trade or to relationships and becoming useful idiots of foreign governments.
Another anniversary coming in 2024 is on February 28th, the 40th anniversary of Pierre Elliott Trudeau's famous walk in the snow, where he went out and pondered the future and came back and said that was enough of politics for him. The polls were not kind to Justin Trudeau in 2023. People were moving their donations elsewhere, especially to the Conservative Party. A lot of questions about Justin Trudeau's future, and a lot of questions about when the next election could be. It's scheduled for the fall of 2025. Could it happen sooner, or could Justin Trudeau follow in his father's footsteps? Will there be a Walk in the Snow, the sequel, with Trudeau, the sequel, in 2024, or will there be another election with Justin Trudeau as the leader of the Liberal Party? And Deanne.
I wonder how many YouTube videos might also be produced in that walk. That I it's an interesting question because there's still a lot. There's still a certain amount of time. Is that in one way, have we seen peak polio in terms of Canada's housing hell? And I think that this is, I mean, and then it's provocative. And I think that really, the winter of our greatest discontent. I wonder if that's where we are. Right now, and yet at the same time, it does it is there a momentum in what's happening with Pierre Poilievre that I think is happening, or is it an anti-Trudeau vote? And I think that this is these are with two parallel kind of questions here, right? If part of it is a is a polyev, a rise in polyev, then that's one issue. Then it really is going to be a competition to for trust, for who do you trust, Pierre Polyev or Justin Trudeau, or is it get them out? Yeah, I want anyone but Justin Trudeau and the Liberals in power, which is totally different, because then one can imagine that it is going to be a walk in the snow, and a very and a very kind of quick decision. But I think it's an interesting question, and I don't I'm not sure. I think, to be honest, I'm not sure, because there are still, I think there's still a bit of time. There, certainly, I think some movements in terms of housing right now. I mean, you kind of see the ministers kind of constantly fly back and forth making housing announcements, because it really is, I think, huge questions around housing, as well as affordability of life, that I think is one of the kind of biggest challenges across the country. And yet, I don't know if the conservatives have solutions that are, I think, realistic to meet here. So, to be seen.
Mario Canseco, in 2024, will Justin Trudeau take a walk in the snow, or will voters take a walk to the ballot box?
I think it's going to be the latter one. I don't see anything that leads me to believe that Justin Trudeau is going to step down. Take on this is, if the election in the United States features Donald Trump, the liberals are going to try to engineer their own demise and have our election at roughly the same time and turn this into a contest of emotions. This is maybe not campaign against Poilievre directly, but say, he's the de facto surrogate of Trumpism in Canada, and this is what you're getting, and we're going to be going back and forth between talking about Trump, talking about Poilievre, talking about Biden, talking about Trudeau. That plays to their advantages, and I think that establishes the type of emotional connection with voters that they have lost over the past couple of years. You're not going to get that back by cutting ribbons or by announcing things. We'll see what the reaction is to some of the things that they've done with the NDP, because we've seen those numbers tracking downward over the past year. People were satisfied with this deal, and the last time we asked in late November, a majority said we're not getting anything out of this. So if they can manage to turn those numbers around a little bit easier, then I think it will be to their advantage. But I still think that if Trump, and that is a big if, of course, and we'll talk about it later, if he is on the ballot, then the liberals are going to say we need to have our campaign at roughly the same time and talk about us as the defenders of democratic values versus Pierre Poilievre.
Speaking of the excited states, it is the presidential election year in 2024. Will this be a rematch of 2020, or will the Democrats and or Republicans think twice about their candidates? Will it be Biden versus Trump? Will it be someone else versus Trump? Will it be Biden versus someone else? Andy Yan, what do you think?
Pretty sure Biden will be in it. I think that it's clear that he is. I think, well, certainly on the older set, I hope to age like that. That I think that it's he'll I think he'll still be on the Democratic ticket. But then I think, wow, who he will be facing, probably going to be up to the Supreme Court of the United States. Probably. I think some really, in one way, big political drama, but yet with massive stakes. And I think that, certainly with some of the rhetoric that has come from Trump, that in terms of, just in one way, signals and paraphrasing from, I think, certain aspects of Germany's mid-century experimentation with national socialism, that I think that it is incredibly troubling. And I think that at the same time, it also touches upon really the state of the United States when it talks to local the local scene in terms of economics, how Americans are feeling about their kind of economic and their economic well-being. And I think that this is really one of the moments through which will define our world, that it is an election that will, I think, define our world and really how what it might look like for decades to come.
Mario Canseco,
I think there's a reason why you still have five people campaigning openly, and thinking, if Donald Trump doesn't get there, maybe I should be the person to do something like this. They wouldn't be there if the possibilities of Donald Trump not being on the ballot were low. And part of the complexity in the American system is going to be what happens with the Supreme Court decision. Like, people might say, Trump appointed these people. Of course, these people are going to let him run, but it has implications for the entire country. It's not something that is going to apply only to Colorado if it gets to be that way. Part of the complexity here as well is we are a very different electorate. Oh, I guess they are a very different electorate from the one in 2016 that said, I'm a Democrat, but I'm not happy with Bill Clinton's wife being the candidate. It's a completely different ballgame now. And you've experienced 4 years of Trump. I think we saw a lot of people who gravitated towards the Democrats in the latter stages of the last campaign. And we could look at Joe Biden's rating right now and say, this is terrible. He's at 30 something. It's similar to how Reagan was doing before 1984. And in that election, the only state that Walter Mondale won was Minnesota, which he represented in this in Congress. So there is an opportunity to turn things around, especially if we continue to have so many things happening around Donald Trump, not necessarily the court cases, because now I think people are bored with the next one and the next one and the next one, but ultimately a court decision, which is massive. This is essentially a court saying you are an insur you were part of an insurrection. This is huge. And to take that to the Supreme Court and to figure it out, it's certainly not where I thought we were going to be in the early stages of 2024.
I didn't realize that it was Ronald Reagan who nominated Sandra Day O'Connor as the Supreme Court judge. And Sandra Day O'Connor, I think, happened to be a liberal voice, happened to be certainly a centrist voice for that court. And they kind of like understanding that, yes, you were the president who nominated me into the Supreme Court has certain, I think, perhaps not necessarily direct benefits, if you will. I think it's going to be interesting to kind of see what's going to happen in the United States, just simply because it's so big. But then we get Canadian leaders who take walks in the snow, and yet we also have a ex-American presidents who get frog marched out of federal elections.
Well, on that note, that's what we got to look forward to in 2024. So there we go. 2024 in our crystal ball here on the Breaker.News podcast with the MMA panel. I'm Mackin, the host. We've got our special guest, Mario Canseco, the other M from Research Co. And we've got Andy Yan from the City Program at Simon Fraser University, the other A, the MMA panel here on the Breaker.News podcast, wishing you a happy new year, happy, healthy, prosperous 2024. And thanks again to you out there in podcast land listening. Hope you keep on listening to the Breaker.News podcast throughout 2024.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Peacemakers. We know we need more of them everywhere in this world for a better year in 2024. Celebrate the Peacemakers in your community. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 31st, 2023. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 31st of December in 1946, U.S. President Harry Truman declared World War II was over, and in 1857, Queen Victoria chose Ottawa as the capital of Canada, which was a province back then? Now you know.
Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News as it happens on X, formerly known as Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week, Happy New Year. Should all acquaintance be forgotten?